What's going on, hustlers? Welcome to the Lift, Love, Hustle podcast. My name is Sean.
And I'm Nikki Nelson.
And today we're going to be talking to you about a very special subject, and that is competition. Fitness competition, to be exact. So, you know, recently we just got back from Houston, Texas, and Nikki over here competed in her very first fitness competition. So we're going to talk about that and what it's like if you want to compete and, you know, what are the steps and what does it look like to compete? So,
yeah. And I mean, number one, I had gotten so many questions from people during prep when they started to hear that this was something that I was doing. And so I definitely wanted to jump on the podcast to explain part of the process and what that looks like for people. And then also, you know, kind of what my motivation was for doing it and why I was doing it and what that looked like for me. So,
yeah. So why did you decide to compete? I never really asked you that.
You're right. You competed. It's only been like, you know, 8 months and you finally are asking.
Yeah. So why did you decide to compete?
So I think, it's kind of a long story, but I'm going to try to sum it up pretty quickly. So, I had started a weight loss journey last year. And, you know, I kind of have a weight goal in mind of where I wanted to go with losing weight and getting back into shape. Because my history with food and exercise has been very, very complicated. And I wanted to finally get healthy, feel great, look great. And so I started losing weight. I was down about 40 pounds when I had come across this competition called Summer Shredding Classic. And they had this division that was super unique, and it was the transformation division. And when I came across photos of the people that were competing in this division, it was people who had had, you know, drastic weight loss, a lot of them with weight loss surgery, which was not the case for me, but I was, you know, looking at these women and men on stage that had lost, you know, hundreds of pounds, some of them, and they just looked so happy to be celebrating this win and this accomplishment for them. And when I saw that, I was like, man, you know, that's something I want to be a part of. And I had already, you know, started losing weight. I knew I was going to continue. So it was a matter of, you know, just biting the bullet and saying, you know, I never, ever in my fitness career, 12 plus years, had a desire to step on stage.
Why do you think that is?
Because I had misconceptions about what that looked like, mm-hmm. what that process was, the type of person or people that compete. I felt that it's a very arrogant sport, very self-centered. And so I never felt like I wanted to be part of that. And this division in particular, because it was filled with people, normal, average people, not bodybuilders per se, but people who were just really genuinely happy to live a healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And so that changed my viewpoint. I was like, this is something I can do. This is something, you know, that I do want to experience. And for once in my life, do this. If I never competed again, you know, I'm okay with that. But this was something that I felt stood for what I believed in.
Yeah, it's just a once in a lifetime opportunity and just an experience. So you mentioned earlier that you started 8 months ago, but how long do you think it should take for someone to prepare for something like this?
So that would completely depend on where they're beginning, right? And also what division they would like to compete in. So typically, so if you start researching, you know, competing, bodybuilding competitions, that kind of thing, typically when you start researching that, they will tell you prep time is about 12 to 16 weeks is average. What I've come to realize now, being in this world and meeting a lot of people that do this, is that actually competing prep time, yes, about 12 to 16 weeks. But preparing your body for prep time and competition is actually a year-round thing. So, you know, I met plenty of people on this journey that were competing in different divisions, and they actually knew when their next competition was going to be and what that was going to look like for them. And so they were like, okay, end of next year, I'm going to be doing this division. So they're working towards that right now in October. We're in 2022. 2022, and they're looking at competing in December of 23, and they're already preparing their body for what that's like. So actual prep time for a competition, you know, cutting back, dialing in your macros and getting your workouts in to prepare you for that. Yeah, 12 to 16 weeks. But as far as like actually knowing what division and what your body needs to look like for that division can take a year or two.
So in that year or two, how many days a week would you say you'd have to exercise per week?
Again, depends on your goal. So when I started, actually, like I knew I was going to do Summer Shredding Classic for October in March. So in March, when I had first started like weightlifting, because prior to that, I was exercising 6 days a week. But I was doing cardio, I was doing Zumba, I was having a good time with it. I was doing Pilates, but I wasn't strength training. And so the strength training is really what sculpts your body. Yeah. and puts the muscle on. So I knew in March that that was something that I was going to be doing. So what I did was I started strength training 5 days a week in March. And then I kind of went 5 days, and then occasionally 6 days, I would do a push every, you know, 6 weeks or so. I would do a push where I would do 6 days a week. Then I would cut back. And so I kind of did this cycle between 5 and 6 days a week of strength training. And then when it came time to compete, like my prep time, it was always 6 days. And it was always cardio, step goals. There was a lot that entailed like in prep time.
So as you got closer to the competition, you'd work out more.
Yes. So, yes.
could you get away with getting ready for a competition working out twice a week?
Definitely not.
Three times a week?
No. And even to lose the 40 pounds with no stepping on stage goal, I was working out 5 to 6 days a week. Yep. So in order to change your body, right? And we talk about this all the time. Like, I was never someone who just wanted to lose weight. I was someone who wanted to transform my body. I wanted to look strong. I wanted to develop muscles. I didn't want to just see the number on the scale continuously go down, but really transform my body. And I think I've been pretty successful in doing that. And the way that you do that is consistent exercise. So exercise became something that I just did every day.
So did you have any help? Did you need a coach or a trainer, or how'd that go?
So you helped, no, Sean did not help me.
You wouldn't listen to me anyway, so.
Yes, and a lot of people did ask me that, like, hey, is Sean training you for this? And I think it's very important to keep in mind, number one, if you're competing, it can be a very lonely experience. And I think having the support of, you know, a significant other, family members, friends, is really icing on the cake. You cannot depend on it. You really have to self-motivate. And so that process teaches you a lot. I came to you before I decided and I said, would you be okay with me doing this? Mm-hmm. Because I knew there was going to be immense sacrifice that was going to happen for myself, but that was going to affect you. Mm-hmm. So, one of the biggest pieces of advice I would give is like, if you are in a relationship and you're deciding that this is something that you want to commit to and do, ask and not ask for permission, but like, lay out your plan because there is financial sacrifice. There is time sacrifice. There is diet and nutrition sacrifice, right? So if you're someone who likes to like sit back on a Saturday night with a glass of wine and order takeout with your significant other, you probably are not going to want to compete.
Yeah.
Because that's something that's cut out for a pretty long time.
Yeah. I mean, even if we went out to eat, she would be going to the restaurants with her own food.
Yeah. Or my food scale, if I'm ordering something super, plain, but typically like we just didn't go out to eat. And so there's a lot of that sacrifice. And then as far as like, someone had asked me actually on Facebook and said like, hey, do you need a coach in order to compete? Or is this something that you can just work out and do on your own? I think that there are people that, especially trainers that know their bodies and know what to do, that can go the distance on their own. But most people I know, even trainers like myself, hire outside help to not only keep them, on track and motivated, but to help them program and to just keep them in the zone. So again, it gets lonely. So when you do have someone to sound off on a little bit during the process, I think it's extremely helpful. And my coach was instrumental in me being able to hit the goals that I wanted to hit in a really healthy, mindful way.
So how do you find a great coach?
hard. It's hard. There has to be a few things. Number one, you have to respect the person. Yep. Number one. So you have to, you know, respect either you want to choose someone who has the look that you want personally, but even more so, what is their track record with training other people? So that to me was number one. If you think about it, and this is what I always went back to, if you look at boxers or, you know, fighters and that kind of thing, and you're looking at like the best fighters in the world, their trainers, their coaches are typically like really small, little men,
older men.
And they're training like these prize fighters. So, you know, I think a lot of people go on social media and they see these like Insta model, you know, fitness people. And they're like, I want to look like her. So I'm going to buy her program. Right. And it's such a mistake because you don't really know, you know, is your body like that person's, you know, what was their journey like? So if you want to hire a coach, number one, you have to respect the person. Number two, for me, I found the competition that I wanted to do first. Then from there, I looked at who in that competition, who were the coaches for the people in that competition. And I found, you know, a bunch of coaches that had coached girls in the transformation division specifically. And then from there, I picked the one that I felt resonated with me the most. And then also the one who had the most wins. So I wanted to work with the person who was the best. And also because I am a trainer, I knew what to look for. Right. So, you know, do your research, find someone whose values align with yours. My coach and I had, you know, several conversations prior to me prepping about my history, right? So my history going in was completely different than some of the girls that, you know, were also in the transformation division. And for me, I had a history of disordered eating and restricting. So, you know, I was coming from that. And so I didn't want to do anything to trigger those behaviors of starving myself, which in the competition world is common to go very low calorie. So we had to do it in a way that was safe for me. Right. And then, you know, we kind of went from there. So I trusted her. When things got tough, I knew that I could, you know, go to her. She was very available as far as like communicating. So you want someone who's not all about themselves and not, doesn't just look great and is taking all these selfies that make you want to look like them, but genuinely cares about their clients. And that's something that we do at Hustle Training 360. So it made sense for me to find someone who was just as committed to their clients. And I found that.
So what kind of competitions are there?
Divisions?
Yeah, like divisions or type of competitions that you know of.
I mean, so there are amateur, right? And I would totally recommend, like, if you are just kind of stepping foot on the stage for the first time, to find an amateur competition. I don't think you want to go, you know, on a national stage as your first experience. But number one, you want to find the show, right? And then from there are divisions within the show. So physique is one of them. Bodybuilding is another. Transformation in this show was another. Bikini is another. Wellness is another. So there's different categories. And in these categories are specific things that you are judged on. So for example, because a lot of people have asked me like, okay, what's next? Or like, what do you want to do next? Do you want to compete again? The answer to that is like, I have no immediate plans to compete again. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but it was a lot. So I'm going to take a break for a while. However, I did have the conversation with my coach, like, hey, if I was to compete again, what division do you think would be best for me? Right. So I think asking an expert, asking a coach, your trainer, based on your body type naturally, what would be the best division to compete in? So, you know, for me, typically, like, I personally would not do figure. I don't think I have the structure for figure.
Figure is more bodybuilder for women, right?
Yes. Yeah. So that's like, you know, the big shoulders. That's what you see, you know, on those magazine covers with the big shoulders and the abs and that kind of thing. And then there's bikini, which is what you see most frequently. And then there's a new division that just, you know, opened up on the pro level, which is wellness. And wellness would be my next step. And wellness is similar to bikini in size. However, wellness has typically bigger glutes and hamstrings. So you want to look at like, what are things judged in that division? So for me, wellness would be a natural transition because I am just built more for a wellness division. I can get really, really small in bikini, but that's not my natural body type.
Yeah, so. I think you might want to even look at what kind of body type are you? Are you an ectomorph? Are you a mesomorph?
Yeah.
Those kinds of ways to discover what your body type is might help you discover which kind of competition you should choose.
Right.
So, you know, how do you find out which show to compete in?
Research.
Yeah.
Research.
Facebook.
Yeah. I mean, I Google, I'm like Queen Google. I Google everything. But I would start with local to you, right? So I took this leap and went, my first competition is going to be in Houston, and we live in South Florida. Mm. That was really challenging.
Yeah.
You know, packing everything, getting an Airbnb where we could cook the food that I needed for that time, not bloating on an airplane. Like, all of these things were things that I had to factor in for my first competition. But I would recommend for most people to find something local to them. So I would literally Google like fitness competition Florida or fitness competition Palm Beach County, like for us, and see what was available or what was coming up. And then from there, I would want to pick a show. Again, I would start with one that's more amateur, because they're just typically more of a supportive environment. For me, the transformation division in my first show, in this particular show, was fantastic. It was a great experience because it wasn't about competing against each other. The women in the division were encouraging backstage. If someone needed something, you know, backstage, lipstick, hair, curling irons, whatever it was a communal kind of environment. And, you know, people, when you got off stage, high-fived each other. Like, it was so different than what I thought a fitness competition was really like,
right,
which was very judgmental, standing there, competing against that person, being angry if someone ahead of you did better. That was not the case for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, what does a typical competitor's diet look like?
It's different for everyone.
Yep.
Different for everyone, and also also different division to division, right?
Sure.
So,
yeah. But and for then, you in particular,
for me in particular, macro tracking was key.
What is macro tracking?
So, food is made up of three macronutrients: protein, carbs, and fats. So, my coach, what is very big into macro tracking, she was a competitor in bikini, right? And she has competed. So that to me was important, someone who understands the experience. And she believes in macro tracking. And macro tracking is something that I have done for the past 12 years. And so I have a very good understanding of it. So that coaching style worked for me. Some people's coaches will just give them a meal plan and say, just follow this, just eat these foods. That was never going to work for me. So for me to have a coach that said, okay, we're going to start with macro tracking, that is what I did. So what we did when I started, you know, first started working out in March and then prep time, my macros were set at a certain level. I started out really high, with, you know, a decent amount of calories. For me, I'm only 5'3". So to eat, you know, 1800 to 1900 calories is a lot. When you're eating healthy food, I mean, I can get like 1900 in at like Chili's or something pretty fast, but like healthy food, like it's a lot of food. So I started there, and that was just to build muscle. So I went through this phase of just building muscle. I was eating, you know, a good amount of calories. I felt really good. I felt strong. Like, I could feel like fueled, right? You feel actually fueled by the food. But then, as you know, when you get into prep, you start to cut your calories, and you don't just cut your calories. You really just manipulate your macros. So my macros started changing throughout the process of prep, and started, again, like with my coach's support, we decided on, you know, what was right for me. Cause we didn't want to plunge too low. And then, although I did get pretty low for me, but you know, we just kind of macro tracked. And so a typical diet was, you know, really protein, carbs, and fats that fit my macros. So I could have eaten anything.
Yeah.
But typically it's like lean proteins. So I ate a lot of, I didn't eat chicken. It was funny because me and the other girls on the team towards the end, the last couple of weeks, you're not supposed to change your diet at all. It's basically like what you've been eating. Do not change or add anything because your body reacts to it. And some of the girls were like, man, I wish I would have started eating steak because now I could have eaten steak. And I was like, I could steak the whole time. But if you look at like bikini competitors or big bodybuilders, they're typically saying they're eating chicken and broccoli, right? That's like the thing, chicken and broccoli. Oh, I eat, or fish.
Or fish and broccoli.
Yeah, tilapia, like fish, white fish and broccoli. That was not my experience. Thank goodness that was not my experience. I was able to pretty much eat anything as long as it was fitting into my macros. So people can eat sweet potatoes. People can eat, you know, rice cakes is a big one. You basically are gluten-free at the end, like not because you're gluten-free, but because the foods that you're eating have to fit your macros. And so those foods fit more. But I did a lot of rice. I did a lot of beef. I did, you know, a lot of stir fries, oatmeal, you know, almond butter. I kept it pretty simple, but enjoyable for me. So I had fruit like the entire time. I know some people say not to eat fruit. I ate fruit like right until the very end. And the very end involved a lot of water, like an obscene amount of water. But
over a gallon, I think.
Yeah, it was like a gallon and a half of water at the end. But yeah, I mean, it's different for everyone. And I think you do start to realize how food affects your body. And I do like that part of prep that it taught me when I felt fueled, when I had a little bit more and kind of output of energy. And I think, you know, if you're someone who really wants to see that kind of progress and learn your body, that is the best way to do it, would be to do a competition and push yourself to be uncomfortable, but to really get to know your body better.
Yeah, I mean, you'll learn a lot about yourself and about your body, and I think it's one of the best things you can do if you have the discipline for it and if you have the right coach. In fact, if it fits your macros, is one of my favorite ways to eat, because it allows you to have that flexibility to eat, you know, almost whatever you want as long as it fits your macros. So, you know, you have the specific amount of proteins, fats, and carbs, just like you were saying before, yeah. Because it's like, you know, life can be challenging, and it's not always easy to eat the chicken and broccoli or the fish and broccoli all the time. So if it fits your macros, is one of the things that I prefer. I've done paleo and all these other ones too, yep. And keto, but that seems to be the best one for me. Another word for it is called flexible dieting. So
yeah. And if you even like Google or, you know, search like a hashtag IIFYM, yeah. Like you'll see so many, you know, people and suggestions on what to eat. I have it on one of my stories, like what I fit into my day, but you really can eat anything then. And so it is a lifestyle of eating, because if you, you know, are even having a day that you want a pack of Oreos, like you can put those on your plan and you can eat that and not have it throw you off track, not have your body, you know, revolt against you for eating that, but it keeps it very flexible. And I think that's a lifestyle.
Yeah. For the average person, I think that's one of the easiest things to follow. Now, what's this thing I hear about peak weeks? I still don't understand what that is.
Peak week was something I researched over and over and over and over, and no one could ever give me a solid answer. So like, I'm almost hesitant to like let the cat out of the bag.
Well, now on this podcast, you gotta let it all out.
On this podcast, I gotta just spill the beans, because I don't know why people are so resistant to talk about peak week.
Well, tell us, what is it?
Okay, so peak week is the week before you step on stage. So typically building up to your competition, you're putting your body under a lot of stress. And I don't mean stress like, oh, I have to pay my bills this weekend. I'm talking about physical stress.
And emotional stress.
I cry during my workouts more than once. Literal emotional crying, because you do feel a level of exhaustion that you're not prepared for sometimes. Or you start questioning like, why am I doing this? Why am I putting myself through this? So there's a lot of that, but you don't actually notice, if you're doing it the right way, the amount of stress you're putting on your body. It's gradual. Yeah. And my plan in particular was very gradual, and my lowering of calories was very gradual because of my history. So some people can just cut right away, boom, 300 calories out of their diet. I kind of went like 50 calories at a time until I was like really low. But peak week aims to relax the stress from your body. So people think that last week you have to push really hard, and that's going to be your hardest week. For me, my hardest week was like the last third week, maybe the last fourth, third, and then second week to showtime. those were my hardest weeks. Those are actually the times that you're pushing the most. That's when you're doing the most cardio. That's when you're lifting the most. That's when you're eating the least. It gets really, really, really exhausting the last month that you are in prep. So peak week is the last week before. So my show is on a Saturday. So starting the Saturday before, my protocols for my plan drastically changed. My weightlifting actually decreased. So I wasn't lifting nearly as much as I had been because you want to start to reduce the inflammation. So I didn't do any Zumba that week because that does put more stress on your body. I lifted less. I drank a lot of water. My calories in the beginning of peak week were, and this is very common, where you actually eat more the first half of your peak week, more than you've been eating. And so you actually feel really good. And then you slowly decrease to that last couple of days. And the last couple of days in peak week, for me at least, and again, everyone's peak week protocols are different. The last couple of days before, I wouldn't say I barely ate.
I don't think you ate at all. I didn't say you eat.
But I did not eat a lot. Yeah. And the funny thing is like I stepped on stage actually more inflamed, I think, because I didn't eat, than right after when I started eating and fueling my body again. I actually, like, all of a sudden I got like really lean and like my muscles kind of filled. And so you could see more definition after the show. And that's common too. But you do deplete yourself slowly during peak week, but you actually try to reduce the stress as much as possible. So you sleep a lot. You're aiming like at least eight hours, but like 8 to 10 hours of sleep if you can. It's exhausting. A lot of the girls that I competed with took that week off from work, like literally took a week off from work and just focused on peak week because that wasn't an option for me because we own a business. But, it's stressful. You're sleeping a lot and, you know, you're not eating, you know, a ton and you're drinking a lot of water. And so it's just managing like that last week. You actually feel good because you can see the finish line.
So what are some obstacles that you didn't see or didn't expect that came up?
Obstacles. I think the unknown, I like to be in control. So the unknown, number one, you don't know really how your body's going to respond during the whole process. So you have to kind of, that's why you have to trust your coach, because you have to kind of just let go and say, okay, I'm going to do everything possible to get into the best shape that I possibly can and see what happens. But I did not foresee judging being something that was as subjective as it is. And so the bodybuilding world in general is highly subjective, right? Like, who's to say that when you go pro level, everyone on stage looks better than like 99% of people you're going to encounter in the real world. Like, they all look amazing. Top of the line. So who is to really say, like, you know, these judges that are looking at all these great in shape people, who's better than the other? So it's really a matter of opinion. And I don't think that I took that into consideration because I knew, number one, the amount of work that I had put in. I knew what my body looked like. My physique looked pretty good in comparison to the other people in my division. And so I assumed, like, I was definitely top 10, probably top 5. Like, I just was like, hey, I'm going to do this. Right. So I think that was probably my biggest obstacle, was wrapping my mind around the fact that you are being judged, but in my division in particular, you don't really know what you're being judged on.
Yeah.
And for me, like, I went in a couple of nights before show and had a meeting with my team. And when I say team, there's a few ways that you can, you can do just individual bodybuilding. There's plenty of people that were on their own, right? For me, I was placed with other people that my coach was coaching that were going to compete in the same division. And so, you know, we kind of banded together. There was like six of us and it was like, this was our team. And at first I hated the idea of being on a team. I'm like, these are people I'm competing against. Like, why would I want to be on a team and support them? Like, this is stupid. And then you realize that it is going to be subjective. And so you just have to like stay in your lane and work as hard as you can. But having that camaraderie backstage, having that camaraderie during the show, during call outs, all of that stuff is invaluable. And I'm so glad that I did have other girls on my team, quote unquote, because it was game changing for me to feel not so alone. And so one of the things that happened was that we had this meeting before and we're practicing our posing. And I just like sat there and I was like, what happens if, you know, we don't place? Like, how are we expected to respond to that? And because I thought for sure I would lose my shit if I did not place. No. I knew I did not miss a step, a workout, a bottle of water, a macro. You gave it
100%.
Like 110% of the time. Every important, though. Rep.
Then you know that you did your best.
I didn't.
So no matter the outcome.
Yeah. And yeah. So I literally did my best. And so I was like, well, what if I don't get a medal, like, or at least, or a trophy? Like, well, then what? And my coach basically said that, like, if you know you did everything, you have no guilt. Yeah. You don't step off the stage. The girls who step off the stage and get pissed are the ones that know they could have done something to change the outcome. There was nothing I could have possibly done to change the outcome. Yeah. And if my role in this whole thing, like God's plan, I don't know, was to maybe be there to support other people, I was okay with that too, because I knew physically I did everything possible. I mean, my hair was on point. My tan was on point. Like, my posing was great. My stage presence. So I literally did everything that I possibly could. And it didn't bother me.
Yeah. So for someone who's looking to get into the competitive world and maybe compete at some level, how much does it cost to enter into a competition?
There's financial strain. It is an expensive endeavor.
Well, you can go expensive or you cannot. I think there's two ways.
Sure. There are things you can discount. There are corners you can cut when it comes to competing. I've heard that competing is an expensive sport. And I never understood. I'm like, okay, why? Like, oh, right. You just pay for some tanning and you go on stage and, you know, how expensive could that really be? It's the little things and they add up really quickly. And so like I did an Amazon order like a week and a half before we left for the stupidest things, like silk hair ties. And you have to sleep in like a, what is it called? Like a,
almost like a,
like a sleeping bag,
but yeah. A sheet.
Yeah. It's like a sheet sleeping bag. Yeah. Because the spray tan is actually the scariest part. And I'm someone who spray tans, like I like spray tanning, but it will streak. And so like you have to be really careful with it and you can't touch anything and it will rub off on stuff. And you can't pee like after spray tanning because I don't know, it's this whole crazy thing. So yeah, spray tanning costs money. All of the extras, like the robe,
bikini.
God, I have yet to disclose the full cost of my bikini, but it is hundreds of dollars for a bikini.
Just for the bikini.
So yeah, I mean that your coach, right? You're going to pay your coach. You're going to pay for posing. You're going to pay for photos, right? Because you want to document the experience. So that's, you know, that's a couple hundred dollars. You're going to pay, you know, obviously you have a gym membership, you know, that's like on the lower end. So the stuff that actually gets you to stage is actually the stuff that doesn't cost that much.
Yeah.
But all the little things, I had a practice bikini. I had, right? Because you don't practice in your bikini, takes like, for anyone who's getting one made, it takes like 8 weeks to be custom made. So during that time, you need to have a practice bikini. So then you pay for a practice bikini and then you pay for, you know, like you said, your shoes. And yeah. There's a lot involved.
But if you had to give a range, would you say it's fair to say that it's around 1,000 to upwards of 3,000 to 5,000?
If you are competing in your, like, ours was expensive because we also had plane fare, yeah. Airbnb, like we had those things, right? If you took out that and you were competing in your state, I would say with your coach cost and your posing cost, you'd probably be at around $4,000. For your prepping, for your prep and your photos and all the stuff, the tanning and the hair and the makeup, right? All that stuff. I did lashes, teeth whitening, my nails, pedicure, right? Like all those things add up. So I would say about $4,000 would be for that. And then if you're traveling for your, you know, for your competition, you know, then you have hotel, airfare, that kind of thing. I mean, I was really lucky because I had support. So I did have you there, and I had my mom there, and our daughter was there. And so, you know, we had extra airfare and stuff. Right. But if you're doing it on your own, you know, I'm sure some people made their bikinis. Like some people wow. did not spend, you know, hundreds of dollars on their bikini. For me, if I was going to do it, it was like, go hard, go home. You know, like I'm doing this maybe one time my entire life. I'm going to get the full experience.
So what was your favorite part? This is my last question.
Okay.
What was your favorite part of this whole experience?
Learning for myself what I was really capable of. I think that was a lesson I could have never saw coming. I just said, I'm going to do this, right? And I didn't really understand how much I was going to learn about myself during the process. When I was on the treadmill and I was walking uphill, you know, 35 minutes at a time, and you know, you're alone with your thoughts a lot, right? Like when you're working out. And I think I was just so proud of myself that I was following through with this. And yeah, it was hard, but I learned, like, it was such a cliche when I used to hear people say, you can do the hard things. But I literally was doing the hard. It was really, really, really hard and really difficult. And I did it and I completed it. And it taught me that I can translate that into other areas of my life and do the hard things. And I can, you know, put the work in and get the result that I want. I mean, I said at the end of all of it, I was like, I still get to take my body home with me, right? Like no one gets to take that away from me. I built that. And so I can go home and I can continue to work on that. And that's not something that anyone did but me. And so that would be my favorite part of this entire experience. I met some really, really awesome people. So that would be my second favorite part. It was like all the people I met, the girls on my team, my coach, other people randomly, you know, that we met, you know, during the time there. But I would say learning for myself what I was really made of and that I can do it. And if I can do it, the reason why I decided to compete was because I wanted to get my story out there. And if I can do it, anyone can do it if you just commit. And that's what it is. It's a commitment to yourself. No one's really looking over your shoulder. And I just hope that this reaches someone that is maybe not even thinking about competing, but maybe just making a change in their life. Maybe they feel really bad about their body. I mean, I hid, you know, for years, not wanting to be in public, not wanting to be social. And so I just hope that this makes someone realize, like, if I make these changes, I can love my body again. I think people who lose weight and gain weight and lose weight and gain weight are the people that eventually feel stuck, like, this is going to be my life. And this is just who I am. I'm someone that just weight just fluctuates all the time, and it doesn't have to be that way. And so that part of things and that part of me, that was my motivation over and over and over, was to be able to share my story, inspire someone who's struggling, who doesn't like what they see in the mirror, because it can turn around. Like I will take a picture now with anyone. I enjoy social interactions. I literally changed my life, myself. I didn't wait for someone to rescue me. I changed my habits. I changed my life. And I hope that this can reach someone who is struggling, and it can help to change your life too.
So if this resonates with you and you are interested in changing your life or just changing your body in general, feel free to reach out to us. We'd be happy to have you with one of our coaches at HT360. We would love to help you. So check out HustleTraining360.com, and we look forward to seeing you on the next podcast.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.